Steele. How are you?
How are you? I'm very good.
Excellent. So am I. So am I. So good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Yes, indeed. It was nice to have seen you in Washington, although briefly. But
yes. I know, right?
Better than nothing.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Well, I'm so glad you could do the podcast today, particularly given all of the stuff that's roiling about at the end of this week, you know, as we kind of wind this week down, everybody's on pins and needles, so it's kind of great to have you on.
I know.
Well, that's just a taste of what you're going to get today, folks. Welcome to the podcast. Yes, it's the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. So glad you could be with us today. Of course, we love it when you download us at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. Certainly, you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. We love it when you do that as well. Well, I'm excited about today's program because given all the crazy that's out there, the anticipation, we are all sitting here waiting, like anticipating dads, new dads and expectant moms of what will come. What will the baby look like? Well, in this case, it's not a baby. It is a report. And the birther of that report, I love that term, is one Robert Mueller. But to help us is none other than one of the smartest people I get to work with, Jill Weinbanks, legal analyst at MSNBC, a wonderful colleague. She was the first woman to serve as an organized crime prosecutor at the U.S. Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. She also was a prosecutor in the Watergate trial. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you very much for having me on. And your introduction leads me to say I have to give a shout out because my cousin's son and daughter-in-law had a baby on Monday.
Oh.
Hello, Cora, and welcome to the world.
Well, welcome, Cora, and congratulations to Mom and Dad, and congratulations to you. So help us kind of get through this process with Mueller, this sort of anticipation. What's your take on where we are right now, and what are you reading in the crazy tea leaves that everyone seems to be smoking as opposed to otherwise putting in hot water and drinking?
Right. Well, first of all, in terms of leaks, they have been absolutely 100% perfect.
Amazing, yeah.
They really have, as is appropriate, that's their job. And it does make it hard because you have a potential subject and other people who have been indicted who have huge bully pulpits, who have an enormous reach, and who are constantly saying witch hunt, hoax, biased prosecutors, I've done nothing wrong, there is nothing there, this is all a waste of money. That's on the one side, and it's unrebutted. So that makes it hard. Our case in Watergate, We were very fast on the obstruction of justice trial team. We were appointed in May of 73. We brought indictments of March of 74. The trial began in the fall. And on January 1st of 75, we had a verdict. So that was really fast. But the office didn't go away. There were other cases within the office, just as there are here.
Right.
And in this case, it's not just within the special counsel's office. It's also there are some that have been handed out to U.S. attorney's offices. So even if the office closed down, there are those tentacles still out there. But I think there's plenty more for the special counsel's office to do. I don't think they're going away so fast.
And you had within the time frame that you just laid out there, the resignation of the president of the United States in August of 74. So,
yes.
You know, your work...
Connected to the resignation was whatever discussion you have about a president while he is the sitting president and whether he can be indicted. And by the way, I believe a sitting president can be indicted and tried.
Yeah, I believe that too.
He's indicted.
Yeah.
But once he has resigned, we went through the same argument with Leon Jaworski saying, okay, he's not the sitting president. We should indict him now and let him stand trial with his co-defendants. And while we were discussing it with Leon, we were preempted by a very quick pardon,
yes,
a preemptive pardon by President Ford, and we were unable to indict him. That would have meant a delay in the trial, but it should have been done. It should have been possible. He should have had his day in court. just like everybody else.
Yeah,
but
he should have. And it's interesting on that point, just to get into a little bit of Watergate history. You know, Gerald Ford took the political bullet that I didn't think he needed to take. His argument was he wanted the country to heal, but I don't think the country necessarily would heal from the resignation in and of itself, certainly the pardon, but rather holding the president accountable for the alleged crimes and misdemeanors, as the phrase goes, that people wanted to see some form of justice. And I think that still hangs in the air for a lot of Americans. And I think it hangs here, and why you see people sort of so anxious and uptight about how this comes out. Does Mueller he will give the full report to General Barr over at Justice, but what then happens and how much of this gets exposed? How much do we get to know? How does this resolve? Who's held accountable? How does that play from your experience then at Watergate and watching this narrative unfold in terms of what the public expectation is? Polls seem to indicate people want to know. The president himself, which I think is somewhat laughable because I don't believe him, says he backs the public release of the Mueller report. I think you and I know that that's nothing more than a con game there. But what's your estimation as you look at this narrative from Watergate to now about the public expectation relative to the actions taken by the Justice Department and investigative officials?
Well, I certainly agree with you that it is a con job to have the president saying he believes in full transparency. It's like so much of what he says, he believes it until he doesn't, and nobody holds him accountable for the flip-flop.
Well, we're still waiting for those tax returns, so, you know.
Yeah, right. And there should be a law, for sure. But I would say your question raises three different points for me. One is the sort of conundrum we're in about indictment versus impeachment.
Right.
And it was different during Watergate. So you first have the question of can he be indicted, and then should he be indicted, which is there more than ample evidence to convict him, because you wouldn't indict unless you had proof beyond a reasonable doubt to indict. And then what happened in Watergate was we said, well, we have a political alternative. We don't have to do this. We don't have to hold him to the criminal standards. This is really a political issue of whether he is so corrupt that he should no longer be the president. And we have an ongoing legitimate impeachment process. The Judiciary Committee was engaged in it. And we felt that turning over the roadmap of evidence that we gave to them, which pointed the way to what they should look at and not reinvent the wheel, they had the evidence, they had the transcripts, they had the tapes. We didn't point to any particular crime that we thought was violated. We just said, here's some things that you should look at to determine what to do.
Right.
So that was possible then. It is not possible now. Then the House and the Senate were in Democratic hands, and there was bipartisan, or at the end, by the time it got to it, there was starting to be bipartisan support. Here, you have really two different worlds. You have the Republicans who will not even ask a question. During the Cohn hearing, They didn't ask any questions. They attacked him and said, you're a liar. Yes, he is a liar. He's a convicted liar. But he didn't tell the truth. And his credibility showed through public hearings, which is my second point. Public hearings are essential. Even if the full Mueller report is released, you will only be seeing transcripts. You will be hearing conclusions. I think America needs to see the witnesses. If you ask people what they thought of Michael Cohn before and after his testimony, you will have two different visions.
Right.
People believed him. They saw his credibility. He didn't stretch the truth. He said what he said. He said, I heard X. I didn't hear Y. I don't see any collusion. I didn't see that. I'm not saying there's collusion. So I think he came across as very credible, and that's why I am, above all, pushing for public hearings, which will show the public one way or the other, And I believe that there are people like Paula Duncan, the juror in the Manafort trial, who says, I believe fully in Donald Trump. I think he's great. I'll vote for him again. But the evidence against Manafort was clear, and I voted to convict him on 18 counts. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if proper evidence is put forward, if it exists, and it's put forward, that people who now support the president will say, oh my gosh, he really is a corrupt person. He is endangering our national security, and we need to get rid of him. And so that brings us to the third point, which is the final report, which obviously I hope will be released in full, but I don't know how full the report will be. Will it just be a quick little summary of we decided to indict or not indict? We decided not to indict the president because of the Office of Legal Counsel policy? Well, that tells us nothing. That will be not at all productive. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be like our roadmap, which doesn't draw conclusions but puts forth facts? That could be helpful if analysts start to look at it and lawyers start to put it together in a closing argument, so to speak. But we don't know what it's going to be yet, so I don't think we should rely on it. Yes, I don't think that the House Judiciary Committee should have to start from scratch. I think they should have available to them all the evidence that has been gathered. We shouldn't spend another few years doing this to regather the same evidence. We should have that released, and that can be done, whatever the Department of Justice says, whatever the president says, by the grand jury applying to the chief judge of the District of Columbia for permission to release in the public interest some of the grand jury testimony. And that's another thing that I have been pushing for, is not just public hearings, but for that kind of a application to the court for a report from the grand jury.
Well, speaking of the public hearings, and you raise a very interesting point there, which again leads me to believe that the Mueller investigation is not winding down, because you still have the House Judiciary Committee, you know, planning to have hearings. And in fact, just this week, call former White House Communications Director Hope Hicks to turn over documents that the House Judiciary Committee has requested in part related to its investigation into whether the president and his administration undermined the rule of law and so forth, all stemming out of the actions of American Media Inc., which is the parent company of the National Enquirer,
right,
and their catch and kill scheme during the 2016 campaign that would ostensibly paid off women who said they had affairs with Donald Trump. So you have this committee, among others, many others, in the throes of us having these public hearings, with some of whom are going to be in some particular crosshairs because they may have testified before, but now there's some question about whether or not they lied under oath. So they're going to be called back in, and how does that impact what maybe they said to Mueller, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, all the evidence right now, Jill, says Mueller is going to continue to do what Mueller has done for 2 years, and that is keep his nose to the grindstone, keep his head down, his face out of the newspapers. Okay, what I mean by that is he's
yes.
not putting his face in his words in the conversation. Others say or claim that they speak for him or think they know what's going on, and we discount that because typically they don't. But so he's going to continue to do what he's going to do, and we will know what we need to know when he tells us. And then the debate can come back to your point, where I think it's going to be an inflection point of making sure that there is full public disclosure, particularly given the allegations of a foreign government's involvement in the election of the president of the United States. The public needs to know exactly everything that we need to know about that. And that's just not what you tell us, but that stuff that really goes to the heart of not just collusion, which I always thought was a red herring, but the corruption of the process and the money trails that were out there, et cetera.
Well, okay, you've raised a lot of really good points. So one is the underlying crime, which here started out to be an allegation of possible cooperation between the Russian government and the Trump team mm-hmm. for interfering in the election. And it's been called collusion. There is no such crime. It's actually called conspiracy to defraud the United States and interference in the election. But that isn't an important element. The underlying crime in Watergate was the break-in at the Watergate offices of the Democratic National Committee. It was a bugging of telephone within the DNC offices, but it was the actual capture of burglars from the White House and the Committee to Reelect the President and former CIA agents in the DNC that led to what became known as the Watergate. But what the problem in Watergate was, what the real crime was the obstruction of justice to cover up mm-hmm. that silly little crime. To this day, there is no evidence that Richard Nixon knew about the break-in before. There is evidence, of course, that his attorney general, who became the head of his re-election committee, knew. There is a lot of evidence about John Dean and Jeb Magruder and Gordon Liddy, who all worked for him, knowing, but there is no evidence he knew before. There is evidence he knew immediately upon it happening, and he said, well, let's just pay them hush money, let's tell them to commit perjury, let's get the CIA to stop the FBI from following the money, because if they follow the money, they will see that the money came from the committee to reelect exactly. to pay for this burglary, and exactly. that will put us into the mix of the crime.
Does that sound familiar, anybody?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. And so I don't care if we can show that Donald Trump knew that the Russians were working with them.
No collusion.
And it's hard to believe. I mean, really, his son, who sought his father's approval, Don Jr., don't tell me he didn't go to him and say, guess what, Dad? The Russian government wants to help you. They're giving us information. So, I mean, any person who's being reasonable. Now, that raises the second point here, which is people are not all reasonable now. During Watergate, there were three basic networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS. That was it. And they all had the same facts. They didn't have the same opinions right. about what those facts meant. But we all agreed on what the facts were. And here you have what people are saying are alternative facts. There are no alternative facts. There are either facts or lies.
Right.
But if you have 30 or 40% of the country believing certain things that are being said by Fox News and Donald Trump and his cohorts, then you don't have them ready to accept the facts. That brings me back to why public hearings are so important. Because some of those people, when they see the evidence, will be like Paula Duncan, and they will say, the evidence outweighs my bias. I like him. I like his policies, but I can get his policies from someone else.
Right.
I don't need him to do that, and I need to have someone who isn't making money in the White House. The emoluments case hardly gets any attention, but there's a very obvious thing where this is a person who cares more about his personal wealth and gain than the benefits of the country. He's not protecting the country.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And for a lot of folks who take the partisan blinders off and take the IV of Kool-Aid out of their, you know, out of their veins, they see this for what it really is. And again, I think those voices will be the loudest when this thing really hits the streets.
I hope so. I worry so much about the Republicans. Their behavior in the Michael Cohen hearing was so awful.
Yeah.
I mean, in every respect that it could have been. And you raise another point, which is the Mueller report will be ready when it's ready. And that is true. And if you come out too soon, you have what Comey did to Hillary Clinton
yep.
just before the election.
Yep.
He came out saying something that totally put his finger on the scale and tipped it. I know I was campaigning in Iowa, and there were people who were suspicious and who were saying, I'm not voting early, which I normally do. I'm waiting because I think there could be another shoe to drop. And as soon as I heard Comey say, we're opening the investigation again, I knew that those votes were lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that was unfair because all he had to do was say to his team, I'm putting every FBI agent in the country on listening to, you know, going through the data here. We will put in a few keywords. If there's nothing here but repetition of stuff we already had, I don't have to say anything. And as you saw, once he got pushed to that, it was only days, but it was too late. And yeah, so you don't want to come out too soon.
What was his thinking? I don't know if I've really ever heard, even from Comey, a good explanation of what the hell he was thinking. To, on the one hand, have the information he had about Donald Trump and sit on it.
Yeah.
And have the information he had about Hillary Clinton and opine on it. Isn't it true, Jill, that typically a prosecutor will not go out and say, well, we don't have the evidence to prosecute someone, but, and then go on and sort of take them down, you know, character-wise. They just don't say anything. So I just never understood what he was thinking that would lead him to believe that his actions would not be viewed the way they have been viewed by a public that was already suspicious.
You are 100% correct. I went to hear Comey speak while he was on his book tour because I thought maybe in person I would see something in him that would explain this, that I would hear him say something or that his response to a question. And nothing he said made it any better for me. I think he clearly made a gigantic mistake. He hasn't admitted that it was a mistake. And it doesn't matter whether he does or not. It's too late. He did it, and it had its impact. But I agree with you. There was no excuse for him violating the rules. His first announcement was equally inappropriate. He should not have come forward and said, we've closed the case, but, you know, she should have been better.
Right.
She didn't do the right thing.
We've closed the case, but if she should have been prosecuted, but I just didn't have enough to prosecute her. What?
Right. He was wrong then, but he was even more wrong when he hid the information about a serious investigation of Trump, but felt that he could do it. So how Trump could think Comey was doing anything other than helping Trump to win election is beyond me. It's almost as silly as Trump's tweets saying that social media is against him. He has more followers than anybody else. He has the largest voice on Twitter of any human being probably in history and probably ever. And so for him to say that they're against all conservatives is loony. It's just a Looney Tune thing,
but,
really, truly.
You know, we like to throw that out there every once in a while just to throw people off. You know, that's a go-to. That's a go-to every time. People would come up to me and this whole thing started and the investigations were ramping up and Mueller had just been appointed, which reminds me of something I want to come back to on the Mueller thing before I move on to one other thing. And that was... they come up and they ask me stuff, and I go, you know what? This is working out just the way we planned it. You know, we had a meeting, and yep, this is going just according to plan. But then there is my buddy, Rod Rosenstein. Who's another tell for a lot of people. Oh, well, Rod Rosenstein is leaving, which means, the Mueller investigation is ending. Well, Rod Rosenstein hasn't gone anywhere.
Right, exactly. And doesn't, you know, he's now staying for what? He's been really unbelievable standing up against all the pressure on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I also don't draw any conclusions from the fact he's staying. Maybe it's because he's really an institutionalist who supports what the Department of Justice stands for, which should be independent investigations, independent prosecutions. It should not be controlled by the White House. But maybe he's just staying until a proper replacement can be found who would be confirmed so that there isn't a gap in coverage, rather than that there's something imminent happening and
right.
So he's sticking around a little longer. Maybe he and Barr are getting along better than was predicted, and Barr said, you know, I really kind of like you. I wouldn't
right.
mind having you stick around.
Yeah, stick around.
You know, there's just a lot of potential explanations for it. And, you know, we all are so anxious to have this wrapped up
yeah.
that we are looking for things that just aren't there. And You know, I could wear a turtle pin every day saying, slow but steady wins the race.
That's right.
We have to take time. Just be patient, because you don't want to do this wrong.
Right.
Because then you're back to Comey, who did the wrong thing.
Who did the wrong thing.
To do
That's
it.
Right.
And so let's do it right.
Yes, for heaven's sake, please let's do it right, because no matter how you do it and when you do it, it's going to be loud. It's just going
right.
People
but,
are going to lose their friggin' minds when whatever happens. That'll be a day in infamy.
That is for sure. And I think we're at a point where people really, on both sides of the fence, want this to be over. But the people on one side, the Trump side, want it to be over because they think it's all nonsense and garbage. And part of the reason for that, something I said earlier, which is Mueller is properly remaining silent. He's not rebutting the false allegations against him. And I'll point to a difference during Watergate. Our press officer, Jim Doyle, felt that while, of course, we could not discuss any facts, that the American public needed to get to know us.
Right.
Because he felt that if they saw that we were decent human beings, that we weren't crazy kids out to get the president, that they would eventually accept our conclusion, whether it was that the president was guilty or innocent. They would accept it because they trusted us. And trust in front of a jury, I mean, as a trial lawyer, I can tell you, the jury has to trust you or they won't believe your witnesses. And so there's something, you have to be authentic, but you have to be honest, and they have to really see that you are doing your job. We're not out to get anyone when we're prosecuting. We're out to put out the facts and to do justice. And that's why Mueller remains silent, even in the face of Roger Stone's outrageous behavior, even in the face of the president's outrageous
right.
behavior. And that's something people need to understand, but it certainly would help. I mean, I think if the American public were asked, who is Jim Quarles? They wouldn't even recognize the name, and they certainly wouldn't be able to put a face to it.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Quarles came with Mueller from the law firm. He was one of my Watergate colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been involved in investigating this sort of corruption for, you know, since he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And but nobody knows who he is. Nobody really knows Weissman, who has now resigned. I mean, you've seen maybe his picture in courtroom drawings, but that's it.
Right.
And so it's harder to trust people you don't know. And that's something that I think helped a little bit in Watergate, was that people did believe when we said something. They believed it because they trusted us.
Yeah. And these times, I think, call for that. But, you know, given the way social media works, someone who remains anonymous will have an opinion about you. So that's some people.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, people,
that's for sure.
You know, that people are like, okay, I don't want to play on that playground. So I've got, before I let you scoot out of here, I got two big ideas for you.
Yes, sir.
Given your legal knowledge and expertise, the first is, in response to the horrific killings of 50 individuals at the mosque, two mosques in New Zealand, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern just this week announced the country was immediately banning military-style semi-automatic weapons. And even the opposition party, which has been a stalwart against such things in the past, came out in favor of this ban. What is your take on that? It's already having some ripple effects coming up on the shores of the United States. Of course, we have the Second Amendment, which is the absolute guard against such an action. But with over 300 to 400 million, okay, listen to me, folks, 300 to 400 million weapons, guns, in the hands of the 330 million citizens of this country. Does this change the conversation in your view, or does this just like any wet water just kind of rolls off a duck's back kind of deal?
Well, first of all, I would say that the Prime Minister has been the model example of what you would expect your leader to do and behave in such a horrendous, mm-hmm. horrendous circumstance. She has been quite remarkable, and is probably pissing off the president because she is such a good example and he has never been. I don't know what it will take to have sensible gun legislation in this country. It is something I've been involved in since I was general counsel of the Army. The Army was giving excess weapons to the NRA, and I worked to make sure that that didn't go on. It seemed completely wrong to me.
Yeah, that seemed a little bit crazy.
It does sound crazy. I worked with Ab Mikva, who was a congressman from Illinois, who became a judge. I don't know. It's who would have predicted that Harvey Weinstein would create the Me Too movement, that he would open the floodgates to the firing of so many people and to the whole new movement? Why was it him? I can't explain that. So I don't know. What horrible example, if Parkland didn't do it, if, you know, go back to, you know, whatever
Sandy
you
Hook,
want to go
right.
back to, Sandy Hook, why didn't that, little children, why didn't the theater, the Aurora Theater in Colorado, where people were sitting in a theater and a crazy person didn't like the popcorn and killed them?
Right.
I mean, who knows what will be the thing? Donald Trump and all his affairs didn't cause the Me Too movement. People go, oh, yeah, we knew. Who cares? But Harvey Weinstein, who doesn't have any power over us, we don't have to go see his movies. But Donald Trump affects us every single day. Why one and not the other? So I can't say what would finally be the thing that will get us to say that guns are a safety hazard for America. They're a health hazard. They need to be controlled. I'm not saying take away people's guns.
Right.
I'm saying let's register them. Let's do some things that are taking away the automatic weapons from the average citizen. You don't need that to kill a deer.
Right.
You don't need that except for mass murder. And so why should people have those? It just doesn't make sense, and there's way too many accidental deaths and too many murders. And I would like to see sensible controls put in place, but I don't know what it will take, and I hate to envision what it would take. What if, instead of flying a plane into the Twin Towers, masked men with automatic weapons came in and killed every single person there? Would that have done it? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. I don't know. It's insane.
It is. It is, and it's a very difficult conversation at one level because people wrap the Constitution around themselves to inoculate themselves from the sight and sounds of people being killed. And that makes it very, very hard. I've always been a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but some form of sensible gun control, if to use that term, but certainly something where you get rid of the loopholes, you take into account the mental health of individuals who may be trying to seek firearms, a background check. What the hell's wrong with the background check? I mean, that's not saying you can't get the gun. Oh, but if it said you couldn't get the gun, then here's the criteria you didn't meet, which wouldn't be arbitrary. So, I mean, again, all discussions point. All right, so one more big idea for you.
Yes.
Antonin Scalia, old buddy and Supreme Court Justice, when he passed away, his seat on the Supreme Court was kept open for 293 days, all right?
Yeah.
And really ticked the Democrats off. So now they're coming back as this presidential cycle starts up with a proposal, a very progressive proposal, in which they are wanting their Democratic candidates and hopefully their eventual nominee to sign on to the idea of expanding the court by at least four votes. Some want to expand it up to six, so you'd have a court of 15. New form of transparent court packing, don't you think? Or what is your take on this idea of expanding the court?
I mean, it seems apparent that the reason for that is that there is now a majority of conservative members of the court,
right,
through the you know, the withholding of the ability to vote for a perfectly qualified candidate, and just saying, nope, we're just not going to do our job. We're going to refuse to have, we're not going to even give them a hearing. That was wrong. That was bad. And it led to a new majority on the court, and we are starting to see the results of that, which is a very, you know, not good from my standpoint of judicial decisions. But I don't think that packing it, because then the next one will say, well, we have to add more because in order to bring it to a Democratic majority, in order to bring it to a Republican majority, and eventually you will have an unwieldy court. I mean, it's hard enough for 9 people to reach a decision, let alone 11, 13. And of course, the reason for having an odd number is that there has to be a majority. And if you have 8 justices, you could end up with a 4-4 vote, and then it would just, you know, not be a decisive decision. And decisive, unanimous decisions are rare. But so you want to be able to have a majority make the decision. I don't think we can right a wrong by creating another mess, and we know how court packing worked the last time.
Right.
It didn't. But I do think that I don't know how you can undo the damage that was done by the Republicans not allowing a vote on Merrick Garland, who should have been the justice on the court. So I don't know what the answer is. The other big idea that's been put out by Democrats is abolishing the Electoral College, which I think actually is a good idea. I think the national popular vote referendum is a way to accomplish it without having to change the Constitution. And the reason that you aren't realistically going to get a change in the Constitution is that the small states aren't going to give up the power that exceeds their population. And you would have to have them voting to ratify an amendment to eliminate the Electoral College. But this national popular vote referendum would allow states to say, we're going to follow the popular vote regardless. And if enough states do that, then you would have a fairer election. These aren't the days when, number one, this was intended to keep slaves not represented. We're also not in a stage where people don't have information. We have 24/7 news cycles, and there is not a person in the country who doesn't get the message and who can form their own opinion. And I think we don't need to have an intermediary to undo the will of the people. So we should find a way around it. That would be fair. Getting rid of gerrymandered districts would be also a good idea. And there are some referendums in states that are looking at that. Illinois, through the Better Government Association and other organizations, is looking for ways to create a fair map. And that would help, but it's not enough. Meanwhile, Democrats have to ask their children to move to Idaho. I mean,
It's that simple. It's that simple.
Really, I mean, if we need to live in better places.
Well, you did my heart good when you mentioned the national popular vote, because I've been involved in that movement for the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I've been an advocate of it, and along with Saul Anuzis and a number of other folks, including Dr. Koza, who was the founder of the effort, to explain and expand the conversation. And it's so refreshing now to see more and more people looking at and turning to this idea, of doing exactly what you said, expanding the franchise for folks, keeping the states in play. The college isn't technically abolished, and what it is a compact, just like any other compact that you have with the lottery that the states have amongst themselves, that says, hey, the winner in Maryland will get the money that comes out of Kansas, right? And
exactly.
The same deal here is that everybody agrees who are part of the compact, and we're now sitting at 200. So we're 70 electoral votes short, I believe, of getting the 270 needed. And once you get those 270, those states in the compact agree that whoever wins the national popular vote for the presidency will get their electoral votes. And it avoids the situation that we've seen, and I would say it's becoming apparently more frequent of one candidate winning the popular vote and the other one winning the Electoral College. And that's just because, quite honestly, people don't really appreciate how we elect a president in the country. It creates more confusion than is necessary. So it's really easy to go the compact route, I think. But so I really appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you very much. It's
well, thank you for being involved in it, because I think it's a really, really good idea. And I hope we can fix the voting systems so that we don't have a question about whether any machines have been tampered with.
Right.
And I've been involved in the hanging chads. So it's not necessarily, you know, manual voting that, you know, protects us, but there has to be a way. And the fact, again, that the Republican Congress has done nothing to change and protect and investigate what could be done says something to me. And it's not good.
Yeah. So, well, Jill Weinbanks, oh my gosh, this was a great conversation. Smart and really, really engaging. I really appreciate you having the time to spend with us this afternoon, and really, really makes a big difference in understanding exactly what's going on with the Mueller investigation and how some of that narrative will play out. So it's a real pleasure having you spend time with the Michael Steele podcast.
Great. Thank you very much.
All righty. All right, folks. So that does it.
I enjoyed it.
I'm glad you did. Just want to just raise one little thing with you. You know what happens to most of us at some point or another? Debt just sort of creeps up on you. You know how that is. How many of us have looked at our finances and screamed, how can we make this much and still have so much debt? Unexpected repairs, replacing the washer and dryer, medical bills, and of course the killer, those insane interest credit cards you had to use to pay for it all, right? Here's a really smart move that could help you get on top of your finances. Get a fixed rate personal loan at bestegg.com. The rates are great right now. And now imagine finally being able to pay down those crazy high credit cards and bills and then bank the money you save each month. Consumers have rated Best Egg 4.8 out of 5 stars on Consumer Affairs because of the super easy online app that takes about a minute with no impact to your credit score. Upon approval, funds can be deposited in as little as one business day. So get your bills under control. Bank what you save and take control of your finances with a loan from bestegg.com. Visit bestegg.com/plan. That's bestegg.com/plan. That does it for this week, but you know I'm coming back because I love you too much. So look for the next episode and be sure to download it from all those wonderful places like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. Certainly follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. And certainly check out Jill Weinbanks and her legal analysis on MSNBC. She's one of the best out there, folks. Catch you next time.